The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, how are you?
Booker Tov, Howard. Pretty good, thanks. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent, thank you. All right, let's talk about the tensions with regard to Iran. It's not getting any easier, is it?
Well, it's not getting any easier, and I think that every day we have like another event or another decision which kind of just escalates the situation a little bit further. And, you know, just yesterday we've seen the U.S. government take a decision to send more troops to the Middle East. They're sending another 1,000 troops to the Middle East for what they said are defensive purposes. And the U.S. Defense Secretary has made quite clear that the reason behind the decision to send these extra troops to the Middle East is because of threats from Iran. Now, those threats are escalating every day. We've seen this whole situation with oil tankers being attacked in the Persian Gulf area. And there are very, very strong indications via all kinds of video footage and all kinds of intelligence information that Iran is, in fact, the power that is behind these attacks that have taken place against these oil tankers. So that's already, I would say, a kind of a statement of war, some sort of an infringement against the U.S. and its allies. And, of course, the U.S. government is not willing to stand by and just watch all of this happen. But I think perhaps even more worrying than that is an announcement that Iran made yesterday that said that they would actually be breaching the limits on how much enriched uranium it can stockpile. And in that agreement that was entered into, the so-called nuclear agreement between Iran and the P5 plus one countries, Iran was limited to hold up to 300 kilograms of enriched uranium, relatively low enriched uranium at 3.67%. Now, on Monday, yesterday, the Iranians have made clear that they are going to breach that 300 kilogram limit within the next 10 days. And so that is kind of a statement not only against the United States, but a very strong statement against Russia, Britain, Germany, China, and the European Union, who are the other signatories to that nuclear agreement, saying we are no longer standing by the terms of that agreement. And that's really asking very big questions of the other signatories as to what they plan to do about this. Now, you know, I found it quite fascinating that European Union Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini has already said that the EU would only react to any breach if the International Atomic Energy Agency formally identified one. So she is kind of washing her hands of having to make any decision about the breach, even if she knows the breach, and even if Iran has formally said, hey guys, we are breaching this limit that was signed up to, because she's saying that unless the International Atomic Energy Agency actually goes in and checks it and formally identifies that there's been a breach, will the European Union act on that and make a decision as to what they're going to do next? And of course, that decision-making process we know can be quite lengthy. So I'm not expecting the European Union to react in any meaningful way to this breach that's expected to take place pretty soon. But it's interesting as to what Russia, Britain, Germany, and China in their own individual rights plan to do about it. I know that Britain has already said that London would look at all options, in inverted commas, in the event that Iran breached these limits. I think we need to just put things into perspective, though, just, you know, for people to understand that even at 3.67% of enriched uranium, this is a very, very low level of enriched uranium, as opposed to, let's say, the 90% level of enriched uranium that is really needed to produce a weapons-grade uranium that could be used in a potential nuclear weapon, and is also quite well below the 20% level that Iran was enriching uranium up until before the deal was actually signed. So there is quite a long way to go, but I think it is a significant breach. It's a significant ceiling that's being breached here. And, you know, there has been a lot of talk about whether Israel might choose to take some reaction, carry out some response to this particular breach and the audacious way in which the Iranians are announcing this in the public area. And, you know, obviously Israel's manner of operating against Iran up until now has been very tactical, and Iran's responses have also been tactical, using Hezbollah and Hamas as its proxies. So there is certainly a level of tension at the moment, given all of these things happening, as to what may happen next, whether Israel might take some action, and as to whether Iran may well decide to respond to that.
Yeah, you know, we spoke yesterday to the Clarion Project, and their view was that certainly Iran would be getting a pass from the EU, and it certainly seems that that is exactly what is happening. The other thing, of course, is we used to this outrageous rhetoric from Iran, and generally the more outrageous the rhetoric, probably the less reason to be concerned. All it does is signify intent. It doesn't mean that it's actually a reality. That said, it certainly one can't afford to take the chance and ignore it, I guess.
Well, up until the time that the agreement was actually signed, Iran was operating below the surface and was doing a lot more than it was talking about, despite its very public and threatening manner of speaking in the public domain. So at that time, a lot of the nuclear work that was being done was really very secret. And in fact, you know, we have reason to believe, at least if Israeli intelligence is to be believed, we have reason to believe that even during the period that the agreement was in place, and even while the U.S. was still signed up to the agreement, there was activity going on below the surface that was a clear breach of the agreement, that Iran continued to do whatever it was doing, even though the International Atomic Energy Agency continuously said that they were abiding by, you know, their side of the agreement, and everything seemed at least formally to be in place. But Israeli intelligence has been saying that that's not necessarily the case, and that Iran continues to operate under the surface, and Israel is not going to believe anything that is said in the public domain, whether it be, you know, lies about what it is not doing, or whether it is simply keeping secret about what it is doing. Israel is always going to act upon what it really knows from its intelligence sources, rather than from the rhetoric in the public domain.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely amazing. And just to see how this whole story is going to play out, really incredible. Israeli government officials have not been invited to the peace conference due to take place in Bahrain next week. I don't understand, Anthony. How does this work? Who is there if Israeli officials aren't?
Well, the U.S. government has made an announcement saying that the reason that Israeli officials are not being formally invited is because they wish to make the event as apolitical as possible.
What? How is this apolitical? How is this possibly apolitical? It's probably one of the most political. I mean, it is a political conference. How does this become apolitical?
I thought so. So I was a little bit confused about that particular statement. I think what they're trying to say, Howard, and, you know, not that I'm trying to defend in any way a statement that on the face of it seems as ridiculous as anything I've heard. But I think what they're trying to say is that this particular phase of the peace conference, of the sharing of information, and of the leadership that the U.S. is trying to take in this particular issue, this stage is about business and about economy. And to that extent, they're trying to keep, let's say, the issues of Jerusalem and the return of the refugees and all these other huge issues that are still on the agenda and that somehow need to be resolved at some point or another. They're trying to keep them off the agenda for now and talk economy and talk business. And it's fascinating that even though the Palestinian Authority has decided not to send any of its officials and is effectively boycotting this conference that's due to take place next week in Amman, Bahrain, it is noticeable that there will be a delegation of Palestinian business representatives who will attend the conference. And this is a little bit of a joke in a sense, because it really shows up the Palestinian Authority as really having taken the wrong decision, and they're being sidelined now in all the discussions that will take place there, whatever will happen there. And even so, Palestinian business representatives have decided that they will go along. And, you know, the U.S. government has said fine, and the Bahraini government has said that that's okay. And so that's what's going to be happening. But, of course, even though the Israeli government did at one point make some public statements about the fact that they would be sending officials to Bahrain, apparently that is now not the case. And so it kind of leaves me very, very confused about exactly what that two-day event is likely to achieve. I'm not quite sure whether the U.S. government feels that this is the way to try to somehow get the Arab world behind the peace agreement, whatever the peace agreement is that the U.S. is planning to present, and whether this isn't the way of conjuring up the money from the Arab world that is going to be necessary to support the Palestinian Authority and I guess to some degree the Hamas regime in Gaza. So I'm very confused as to exactly what is expected next week, but I suppose we will have to be patient for another week and see what will come out of that, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, for sure, because it just, otherwise it makes absolutely, absolutely no sense. Finally, Sarah Netanyahu has been convicted of fraud after entering into a plea bargain arrangement with the state prosecutor. What are the details of these, of this plea bargain?
So this was a charge that was laid specifically against Sarah Netanyahu as opposed to against, Prime Minister Netanyahu, who of course is handling issues of his own, but this was a charge against her personally, because she was accused of wasting state funding in a way that's clearly illegal and against the law in terms of what is allowed for the Prime Minister's residence by buying in catered food for the Prime Minister's residence from outside caterers, when in fact the Prime Minister's residence has a chef that is allocated and is paid for by the state, and works for the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister's family, and of course all of the guests and visitors who might attend the Prime Minister's residence from time to time. This is a chef that's paid for by the state. Food is bought and whatever, and the chef is supposed to do the catering. And despite that fact, it is alleged that Sarah Netanyahu ran up bills of outside catering that came to something like 350,000 shekels. So not an insubstantial amount. It's about $100,000 worth of outside food that was brought into the Prime Minister's residence over time, as ordered in by the Prime Minister's wife. And so she was charged with defrauding the state to this amount. In the end, in the plea bargain, the 350,000 shekels was reduced down to 175,000 shekels. And in fact, the court ordered the parties to go into mediation, which is a very standard practice that is used by courts in Israel. The first hearing that is normally heard in a civil trial by an Israeli court will immediately order the parties to go to mediation, and there are outside mediators who are recognized by the courts, and the idea is that the parties will go and they will try and mediate it out without having to require the court to make a decision. And they will come to some sort of an agreement, and then the court will simply ratify the agreement, and that's that. So the court will not be called upon to make a decision. And that's exactly what's happened in this particular case, where the parties were ordered to go to mediation. And in the mediation, they came to this plea bargain arrangement where Sarah Netanyahu apparently has admitted to ordering food into the value of 175,000 shekels, which was not allowed by the law, given the circumstances at the Prime Minister's residence. And she has been fined 45,000 shekels, which apparently 45,000 shekels is made up of 35,000, I think. She's been fined 55,000 shekels, of which 45,000 is a repayment to the state for the money spent. That has been wasted, which is obviously only just a fraction of what was actually spent. And another 10,000 shekels is a fine that has been imposed upon her by the court. But I think the most important thing about the whole situation is that even the Prime Minister's wife is not beyond the law, that she has to abide by the rules that are set down for state funding at the Prime Minister's residence. And now she actually has some sort of a conviction, a criminal conviction against her, because of the fact that she's admitted to this and she's entered into this plea bargain. So that's something that she's going to have to carry with her for the rest of her life.
Incredible. Absolutely unbelievable. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow.